Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the nation's Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, acting as Trump's hatchet man as he conducts a purge of the FBI to validate Trump's narrative that the special counsel's investigation into Trump's Russia ties and obstruction of justice are a Democratic-inspired witch hunt by a bunch of sore losers out to delegitimize Trump's glorious victory in the Electoral College. Asher Rangappa, Associate Dean at Yale Law School and a former special agent at the FBI specializing in counterintelligence, joins us to discuss how Sessions has leaned on the Trump-appointed FBI Director Christopher Wray to fire the Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe and the FBI's former General Counsel James Baker, both of whom were close to the fired FBI Director James Comey and are witnesses in possible obstruction of justice charges against Trump. We will also examine warnings given to Jared Kushner from the FBI that his friend Wendy Deng, the former wife of Rupert Murdoch, could be working for the Chinese. Then we'll speak with Peter Stone, a special correspondent for McClatchy DC Bureau, who since 1990 has covered a wide array of lobbying, legal and campaign finance issues in Washington, about his article at McClatchy with Greg Gordon, FBI investigating whether Russian money went to NRA to help Trump. We will look into an FBI inquiry into a former Russian senator with ties to organized crime who was close to Putin, suspected of funneling money through the National Rifle Association to help elect Trump. Then finally, we'll speak with Alexander Hertel Fernandez, a professor of international and public affairs at Columbia University, who is a co-author of a new study at the National Bureau of Economic Research, From the Bargaining Table to the Ballot Box, Political Effect of Right-to-Work Laws. We will discuss how the increase in the number of states adopting right-to-work laws has hurt Democrats by diminishing their fundraising, their ability to organize and get out the vote, and their fielding of blue-collar candidates who can relate to working-class voters, many of whom voted for Trump. And joining us now is Asher Rangappa, who's Associate Dean at Yale Law School, who teaches national security law and related courses at Wesleyan University, the Jackson Institute for Global Affairs at Yale University, and the University of New Haven. And previously, she served as a special agent at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, specializing in counterintelligence investigations in New York City, and now is a political analyst at CNN. Welcome to Background Briefing, Asher Rangappa.
Thank you.
So we're learning, of course, that Attorney General Jeff Sessions was questioned for some time by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. But prior to that, we learned that Attorney General Sessions had been leaning on the FBI director, Christopher Wray, to replace the deputy director of the FBI, Andrew McCabe, and the former FBI general counsel, James Baker, both of whom Comey confided in after he had met with Trump when Trump leaned on him to go easy on General Flynn. So those two presumably are witnesses in a possible obstruction of justice case. So it seems pretty clear, is it not, that President Trump is basically leaning on those investigating him and going after the investigators rather than cooperating with them?
Well, this is the second time that we're seeing him trying to interfere somewhat directly with the FBI. The first time, of course, being with his conversations with Jim Comey and then, of course, firing him. And as you mentioned, Ian, this is especially problematic because the two people you mentioned, Andrew McCabe, who is the deputy director at the FBI, and Jim Baker, who was the general counsel at the FBI and is now in a different division, are both likely to be witnesses in an obstruction of justice investigation about the firing of Jim Comey, because as you said, Comey would have spoken with them immediately after his conversations with the president, which he documented, and anything that he said to these two people could corroborate his version of events, which, as you know, the president vehemently denies that he tried to encourage Comey to lay off the Russia investigation, for example. So it's incredibly problematic, and I think that it goes to an attempt by the White House to try to coerce the FBI to conform to the political narrative that it is really putting out there, which is that the FBI is corrupt, you know, can't be trusted, is biased. And of course, if Ray had fired these two individuals, they could have pointed to it and said, aha, see, we told you, our appointee, Christopher Ray, agrees with us. And it sounds like Christopher Ray stood his ground and refused to do that, probably because, by all accounts, these two individuals are very highly regarded in the FBI for their investigative reputations and their ethics, and he did not believe that they were that they deserved to be fired. So, yes, it's incredibly troubling, to say the least.
But it is clearly the entire narrative of Trump's defense, and it fits into it, doesn't it? Basically, what Trump is saying is that the Russia investigation is bogus, and it's ginned up by the Democrats, who are sore losers, and they don't want to accept his victory, so they're trying to diminish his authenticity as an elected president. And so he's going after people that supports that narrative, not whether or not it's true. I mean, when it certainly appears not to be true. So this is what I find extraordinary, is that the president is successfully creating a fictional version of what happened in order to frustrate the real version of what happened, which is being investigated.
Yes, well, I think we want to parse out a couple of things. So remember that the Russia investigation, the investigation into Russian interference in the election, is really separate and severable from the obstruction of justice investigation. In other words, the Russia investigation could end tomorrow or nothing could come of it, but the obstruction of justice case would still stand, because obstruction of justice has to do with how did you behave about an ongoing investigation, regardless of the merits of that investigation. They're two different things. And the firing piece is really relevant, I think, to the obstruction of justice case, because as I mentioned, McCabe and Jim Baker will be key witnesses. And by discrediting them, if that's what he was trying to do by trying to get them fired, by being able to point to them and see they're liars, you can't believe anything they say, they're untrustworthy, he's essentially trying to undermine the obstruction case against him. And in my opinion, that is the far bigger problem he has to worry about. Because right now, as you know, shady as the Russia investigation is becoming, with all of these players, we don't have anything that is directly linking the president. We don't have a smoking gun. And already, you know, linking the president to an intelligence operation, you know, that becomes trickier. You have to start looking at crimes like conspiracy and stuff. Obstruction of justice is pretty straightforward, and it's something that has been already introduced as an impeachable offense in America's history. So I think that is the one that he has to worry about, and that's the one that he is trying to discredit with as much effort as the Russia investigation.
And again, I'm speaking with Asha Rangappa, who's Associate Dean at Yale Law School, who teaches national security law and related courses at Wesleyan University, the Jackson Institute for Global Affairs at Yale University, and the University of New Haven. And previously, she served as a special agent at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, specializing in counterintelligence investigations in New York City, and is now a political analyst at CNN. But the extent to which Donald Trump's attacks on the FBI and his constant tweeting about McCabe and his wife, who ran for elective office as a Democrat in Virginia and lost, and he claims that Trump keeps claiming that they got money from Hillary. They got money actually from a couple of different sources, one of which was the governor at the time, Terry McAuliffe, but no, there's no evidence that there was actually any money coming from the Clintons. But that's the narrative that Donald Trump has established. But he's getting a lot of help from Republicans as well, who are also attacking the FBI, as you well know, and suggesting somehow that they're a bunch of closet Democrats and liberals. But the one person that the Republicans, congressional Republicans, are targeting is James Baker. And they're targeting him because they are trying to gin up this idea that somehow he was the guy that set up the connection between Mother Jones's David Corn and Christopher Steele of the explosive Trump-Russia dossier. So they are going after Baker in the way that they're going after the Russian story. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can talk all day about what the Republicans are doing. I mean, at the end of the day, nothing, none of this is really going to have any bearing on Mueller's investigation. All of the, you know, public assassination of the FBI, et cetera, is just that. It's politics. And we have to remember that Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is proceeding. He's proceeding methodically. He's proceeding at a fast clip. He has a lot of information. He has a lot of witnesses. He has cooperating people that he's already indicted and who've pled guilty. And eventually, the cases will be made in a court of law. And at that point, if you know these, if the Trump's lawyers or whoever's caught up in this net want to go into a federal courthouse and accuse the FBI of lying or leaking or whatever they're doing, they're going to have to show actual evidence of that. Until then, what this is ultimately is just a lot of kabuki theater to, you know, basically play to their base. It's really sad because it is very delegitimizing in terms of upholding the rule of law and you know, the integrity of the institutions that are here to protect the United States. So that's unfortunate. But I think we do need to always remember that what these narratives are about are political narratives. They don't have legal meaning.
But they could have a real impact on the Mueller investigation if you consider what they're doing as a way to condition the base for the firing of Mueller. I mean, that's not out of the question, is it? That by delegitimizing Mueller and delegitimizing the FBI and trying to make it seem like a partisan attack on Trump's legitimacy as president, and somehow the FBI has become an enabler of this fictional attack, then it has real-world consequences. If Mueller goes, then what happens to the investigation?
Well, I think that's where Trump is going to learn the same lesson that he learned with Comey. If he fires Mueller, the investigation will still be there. This investigation is not wrapped up. Like, Mueller does not own this investigation any more than Comey owned the investigation. This is a part of the FBI and the Department of Justice, and I suspect that at this point there are likely many different cases on many different individuals, thousands of documents, of interviews, of intercepts, of information that's been shared with the United States, with its allies. This is located in the databases of the FBI and Department of Justice and probably in other intelligence agencies around the world. And so, you know, I think most people in the government understand that and what a huge mistake it would be for the president to fire Robert Mueller. He does have to go through several layers to try to do that. He has to get Rod Rosenstein to fire him and then fire Rod Rosenstein if Rod Rosenstein doesn't do it. That's deputy attorney general. So it would be a huge production, and it would ultimately be for naught. And I think that, so I disagree. I don't think this is about conditioning it for Robert Mueller, to fire Robert Mueller. I just think this is complete political theater.
Well, the other big story, along with the fact that the Attorney General spent several hours testifying before the special counsel, Robert Mueller, is that the New Yorker has a very extensive article by Adam Muntos and Evan Osnos about Jared Kushner. The title of it is Jared Kushner is China's Trump Card. And it makes the case that an influence campaign has been unleashed by the Chinese, particularly by their ambassador here in the United States, who obviously his career was in jeopardy because, like everybody else, he predicted a Hillary Clinton victory. But he's managed to redeem himself with his bosses in mainland China by carrying up a relationship with Jared Kushner. And apparently Jared Kushner was visited by the head of the FBI's counterintelligence head, who basically warned him that he was the target of an influence campaign, not just from China, but from other countries. We don't know the extent to which apparently they tried to also tell Donald Trump when he was making these phone calls or receiving phone calls in the transition period that there's a certain protocol to follow, which Trump apparently didn't follow. So we don't know what he said, what promises, what deals were made. But what's your understanding of how much this president and his son-in-law haven't followed the rules and perhaps even unwittingly have provided people like the Chinese and other countries with information that they shouldn't have.
Well, in the intelligence world, there's an acronym that's used to describe the motivations that intelligence agencies will exploit in order to get people to wittingly or unwittingly spy for them. And it's called MICE, and that stands for money, ideology, coercion, and ego. And generally, people's vulnerabilities, if you will fall into one of those, and intelligence agencies can identify those and exploit them. And I think that if you look at the president and you look at his son-in-law, money or greed is definitely something that's there. These are people who have consistently sought to make money whenever they can do it, perhaps without regard to the rules or ethics surrounding it. And ego is also something that appears to show up with a lot of people with, around the president himself. So, yes, you know, when you're an intelligence service and you see that there are people who are very susceptible to those things, you can essentially get them to play along with you without even having to say it out loud, or perhaps even without having your targets know that they're doing it. So it's not surprising to me. We've seen this, you know, at least we know for a fact that the Russians made attempts to contact Jared Kushner, for example, and he didn't call the FBI. That's something that any normal person would do in the circumstances that were present in that situation. And, you know, he sought to get political advantage for his father-in-law. So I'm not really surprised at all that other intelligence agencies would also see these same people as potential targets.
Well, apparently there's a protocol that all other presidents follow during the transitions when they do get phone calls from all kinds of people. Obviously, everybody wants to curry favor with the new president. And apparently in these phone calls that are made or returned, there's usually a national security officer along with a State Department official, you know, explaining the protocol that basically the president-elect can accept congratulations, but little else, because he's not the president. This president apparently didn't follow those rules, and all kinds of people were coming in. As you know, that was what the unmasking was about, because this character from the Emirates, MBZ, showed up secretly without letting the State Department know he was in the country for secret meetings with Trump's people and the former head of the mercenary army, the brother of the Secretary of Education, Eric Prince. So all kinds of strange stuff going on. The most extraordinary one of all is the fact that apparently Jared Kushner was advised by FBI counterintelligence to be wary of his relationship with Wendy Deng, the former wife of Rupert Murdoch. Apparently, she had an affair with Tony Blair, which was the reason why they divorced. And presumably, if there was some pillow talk involved in that, that Chinese may well have gotten some good secrets out of Tony Blair. So that is something that's out there. What do you know about that?
I honestly don't have anything to add on that front. I've been really bogged down with all of the FBI stuff today, so that's just not something. I'm really sorry that I have anything additional to add beyond what I've said, that, you know, Jared to me would be a typical target, given his access, given his vulnerability, given his probable willingness to go along with things and take ethical shortcuts and probably not report things as he's required to.
Well, Asha Rangappa, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Okay, no problem. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Asha Rangappa, who's the Associate Dean at Yale Law School, who teaches national security law and related courses at Western University, the Jackson Institute for Global Affairs at Yale University, and the University of New Haven. And previously, she served as a special agent at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, specializing in counterintelligence investigations in New York City, and is now a political analyst at CNN. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the FBI investigation into whether Russian money went to the NRA to help Trump.